Welcome back in, Mac and Cube in the morning. SEC Players of the Week, special teams, Will Reichert, Alabama kicker, defensive line, Jordan Davis at Georgia, Zachary Carter at Florida. I didn't think that one would be split after what Jordan did. Kenyon Green, Luke Fortner split, offensive line. Debo Williams, linebacker, South Carolina, your freshman of the week, along with Caden Costa, your kicker from Ole Miss. Those are your SEC Players of the Week. And listen, if you're having a bad week or a pet in your household is having a bad week, maybe with some arthritis, you're having trouble getting around, your CBD store has some answers. Maybe you're trying to look for a better, new, different way to wake up and feel a little bit more refreshed in the mornings. They have broad-spectrum mango CBG gummies that can deliver an uplifting effect for a great start to your day. What about at night, trying to get a better night's sleep? Full-spectrum blueberry CBN gummies for a great, restful night's sleep. Those are released. Those are in stores now. There are new products that are coming in monthly at your CBD store. That's why they're the largest brick-and-mortar CBD retailer in the world, and they focus their attention on being the best plant sciences company out there. So you know that the extracts and the plants that they work on finding to put in their stores and their products are going to be the best, and they're going to have that USDA certified organic oil stamp seal as always. Great customer service, multiple products to help you out in multiple ways that you can deliver them to yourself. So, four locations, Highway 280 by Bailey Brothers, 150 by the Cage in Cleaver, Trustful just off 459, and now downtown in Five Points. Your CBD store where good health hits home. Rodney Nabulsi always hits home talking Georgia Bulldogs. He is the authority on everything Georgia. You can follow him on Twitter at Rodney Nabulsi. UAB heads into town this weekend. Roddy, there are a lot of people that are listening to our show right now that are very interested to know who Georgia is going to start at quarterback and what that depth chart at that position is going to look like Saturday.
Yeah, I wish I knew 1,000%, but I'll tell folks what I was told yesterday. We broke the news that there was an issue there, and I told our readers at UGA Sports, I said, look, a lot of rumors going around right now, but here's what we know. He is expected to be at practice today. This is Wednesday morning. And sure enough, he went to practice Wednesday morning. And we know that he was limited some in practice Tuesday. He split reps with Carson Beck yesterday. He does have an oblique issue. There's no question about that. The question is severity. How bad is it? I mean, guys play with injuries all the time. We saw Arian Smith, who has turf toe. He covered a couple punts for Georgia, but didn't line up to take passes. Kearse Jackson returned a couple punts, Saturday, but he didn't line up to go out and catch passes. So guys are hurt. Some are injured. There's a difference there. So JT Daniels is hurt. I don't know that he is injured. I'm told that unless anything drastic happens today or tomorrow, and you know, with an oblique, you could be reaching for a salt shaker and all of a sudden make it a little bit worse, but I'm told that he will be fine. So as it stands now, I believe that JT Daniels is your starter Saturday. Now, Carson Beck's quarterback coach down in Jacksonville is telling everybody that Carson Beck's going to start. Maybe Carson told him that. I don't know. But I'm telling you, from some of the highest sources within the University of Georgia, and I've been doing this since 1993, I have good sources. I spoke to some people who were right there in the heart of the building, and they said they expect JT Daniels to be your starter Saturday. He does have a minor issue. They're resting it. He's improving. He should be ready to go. So that's what I was told. Now, again, there's still 72 hours before the game. So things can happen. But as of yesterday, my best sources and the people who I take at face value, they haven't lied to me before, say, look, JT Daniels has an issue. We're going to rest it. He's going to be fine.
When you think about the quarterback spot in general, and JT, of course, there was so much excitement coming off of last year, how things finished. Obviously, last week was a difficult matchup. Everyone knows that. How would you gauge the offense as a whole and their performance last week? Was that more about the inefficiencies that Georgia had offensively, or was that about just how good Clemson's defense was?
It was completely ineffective. You scored 3 points, and Ohio State torched them. Other top teams torched Clemson's defense. And it's not like there was this huge influx of freshman talent that changed everything, but and they had some guys out. We broke the news that the defensive tackle was going to be out with COVID. So Brian Breezy's phenomenal. Miles Murphy's phenomenal. I was talking to one of the guys in Georgia's recruiting office down on the field, and he's like, "Hey, there's 75% of the guys on that field. We are on other sideline that we went after." I'm like, "Yeah." So Clemson's loaded. I'm not trying to take anything away from Clemson. I think it was a combination of both: a little of column A, a little of column B. Clemson's defense was lights out. They were Georgia lost his right guard in the system they played. Yeah, the two high safeties taking away any deep shots, saying, "Look, we don't think you can run on our front seven because they're really good." And Georgia wasn't. I mean, Georgia ran some, but not like they're used to doing. Not like they do with their normal stable of backs and five-star offensive linemen, and with the game plan of just getting rid of the ball fast, it was ineffective. But they also had so many guys out there that did the wrong thing. Kirby Smart pointed out in one play where Arian Smith block, Adonai Mitchell blocks the wrong guy. Ladd McConkey lines up in the wrong spot. Brock Bowers, the tight end, does the wrong thing. Three guys out of 11 mess up on one play. You know, it could be a great play call. The other guys could execute, but as you know, it only takes one guy to screw up a play, and you had three. So a lot of faces out there you don't normally see, and a bunch of true freshmen out there as well. So just completely ineffective, but add that you were facing one of the best defenses in the nation, and that's why you wind up scoring 3 points. I think they will get much better. There's a lot of stuff that's fixable. There's a lot of talent there. Get the guys doing the right thing, and you'll see that explosiveness. You'll see those long plays. But, you know, going up against that Clemson defense is, you know, good luck to everybody else, because those guys are legit.
Roddy Nabulsi of UGASports.com joining us on the Michelob Ultra Hotline, talking Georgia injury situation. JT Daniels first up. We covered that. So we want to get to things on the field, but now Kirby Smart says that there's a COVID issue in-house. How serious do you believe that this is? And do you expect any heavy contributors to miss time against UAB because of it?
I do not. And that's going back to last week. Remember the tests that he's talking about were all those positives were from last week. Who knows what's going to pop up this week. But last week there were three players that had it and a couple staffers. Ron Corson, Georgia's basically their lead guy on COVID, who is vaccinated, wound up getting it, as did a physician's assistant. And then two walk-ons got it, and one backup offensive lineman got it. So it was not heavy contributors by any means. We knew about that going in, that those guys weren't going to make the trip. Georgia did travel 85 players. This home game, they will dress out just about everybody. We've not heard of any other players testing positive, but here's the thing. They don't test until today. So the unvaccinated players will test today because they have to, and any vaccinated players who are showing symptoms will test today. So everything we're talking about was from last week. We don't know what's going on this week, and we probably won't know until tomorrow, but that's just no way to tell.
Tell us a little bit about Carson Beck, because I don't know a whole lot about him. If, in fact, JT is unable to go, is Carson Beck a suitable or adequate replacement?
Talking to the people inside the building, they love him. When he got here his first year, all the words that were coming out of practice was, Georgia missed on this kid. Georgia should not have offered this kid. Why in the hell did they take this kid? And we knew, you know, he was one of the top quarterbacks in the state of Florida, but at Georgia, he just looked terrible that first year. But you got to think about it from his standpoint. He arrives at Georgia hoping to go through spring camp, and spring camp is canceled. And then the summer workouts are pretty much canceled because of COVID. So he's not able to be out there. He doesn't get the advantage of the spring camp. He doesn't get the advantage of working on those 7-on-7s. He basically gets thrown into the mix with Jamie Newman and JT Daniels and Dwan Mathis and Stetson Bennett last year with zero college experience in fall camp. So the poor kid is just overmatched. And everyone's like, wow, this kid in practice is just garbage. And they were just gave him his – no one would say this publicly. This is all behind the scenes. And they're like, wow, this kid just doesn't have it. Fast forward a year when he has all those practices and he works the scout team and stuff, and then gets fall camp and gets all the – gets fall camp, gets spring camp, gets the summer workouts. And they're like, wow, this is the kid that Georgia went after. He's really, really good. So talk about an absolute transformation – within and without the athletic building over there, they love this kid. And there was talk yesterday. They said, look, if we have to go with Carson Beck, we're going to be fine because they really think he could do it. Good pocket presence, strong arm. Maybe wants to fire it in there a little harder than he should, but Georgia's they feel no compunction about stepping up to, with Carson Beck. And I mean, everyone keeps making a big deal out of the fact that in one of the recent press conferences, Kirby Smart mentioned that Carson Beck was the number two quarterback. He was the backup. You know, maybe it would be Stetson Bennett who won you all those games last year. And everyone's like, well, see, he's tipping his hand there. He's telling everybody that Carson's the backup because that's who he's going to have to play. And I would like to point out that Kirby was asked this question directly, you know, hey, who's your backup quarterback? He did not introduce it. So what did you want him to do? Not answer the question. So he wasn't trying to tip his hat or, foreshadow what might happen this weekend. He was basically just telling everybody, hey, I was asked a question and Carson Beck's number two and he's a clear number two, which is interesting because, like I said, Stetson Bennett has won you games. He beat a ranked Auburn team. He beat a ranked Tennessee team. He won SEC football games for you and they would rather go with an untested Carson Beck. That says a lot about Carson Beck's ability.
All right, so Roddy Nabulsi of UGASports.com with us on the Michelob Ultra Hotline. There are some other injuries that have not just taken place but seem to be sort of winding down. Tyke Smith, Darnell Washington look like they may be back in the mix soon. John Fitzpatrick, not sure how close to 100% he is. I know he's obviously available, but when do you expect him to be maybe 100% or as close as he's going to get to it? And when do you expect maybe Washington and Smith to be back on the field?
Well, with Fitzpatrick, it's like I said, there's a different hurt and injured. He played Saturday, actually graded out really well. Georgia would have been lost without him. And we talk about the fact that you're missing all these tight ends, and Georgia had to run a lot of 12 personnel, and everyone was so excited with Brock Bowers. But if it weren't for John Fitzpatrick, Brock Bowers would have led the team in receiving last week because he made that possible. He's injured. He's playing through it. He's hurt. He's playing through it. He will be out there this week as well. Darnell Washington and Tyke Smith, this is where social media drives me crazy because these guys would tweet out stuff like, hey, got something for y'all Saturday, or we got news coming, and everyone kept thinking that they were going to have this miraculous healing thing. And Kirby Smart says they're day-to-day, and I'm trying to tell people, look, they had foot surgery. They both broke the fifth metatarsal in their feet. I don't know if it's the same foot, right and left, but it was the same bone on the same day. Two different players break a bone in their foot, and they had surgery the following day. You're not going to bounce back in 2 weeks from foot surgery on a metatarsal bone. So we were told 4 to 6 weeks. 4 weeks would be the South Carolina game. So I do not expect them to suit up this weekend because there's no real need for it. The worst thing you could do is bring those guys back with a bone that's still knitting, and they step wrong and make it worse. You don't need them for UAB. You probably don't need them for South Carolina. So there's no hurry. I know those guys want to be back out there, but you will need them in the rest of the season facing Auburns and Floridas and SEC championship games and playoff games and stuff like that. So I don't expect them to be back, but I expect John Fitzpatrick to play.
What all can we take from this game this weekend? I think UAB, a lot of people in this footprint, somewhat familiar with what UAB can do. And if this game's, for whatever reason, close, is there going to be a concern level amongst Georgia faithful that is reasonable? Are they going to overreact to it? I mean, what does the perfect game for Georgia look like this weekend to the point where they can still keep up some of the momentum they created last week?
Was it a perfect game for the Georgia coaches or a perfect game for the Georgia fans? Because you nailed it. If it's close, there's going to be overreactions and stuff. And people do not understand how good UAB is.
Right.
Most people, like myself, you hear UAB, it's like, oh, isn't that the program to shut down football? No, we should be able to destroy them. And the perfect game for the fans would be 77-0. JT Daniels throws for 400 yards, and everyone looks to Luther Burden, the number one wide receiver in the nation, and say, see, this is what we do. That's the perfect game for them. For the coaches, it's, hey, get out of it injury-free. Get the win. Have your players do what they're supposed to do. Have Adonai Mitchell block the right guy. Have Jalen Johnson do his job. Have come out of healthy and have guys not line up or block the wrong assignment. You know, no one work out some of your depth with those, like Keely Ringo. Kelee Ringo, the number two cornerback in the nation a couple years ago, comes to Georgia, has shoulder surgery. His first game is against Clemson. He gets two pass interference calls. Okay, that was on the big stage. His first game was one for the ages. Let's let him, you know, I don't want to call it a teeth-cutting game, but let's have a game without as much on the line, and he gets to go out there and practice his craft, you know, in front of a favorable home crowd, and, you know, gets better for when it comes to facing South Carolina the week after. So, yes, if it's close, people are going to overreact because that's the nature of fans, and it's the lack of respect for UAB. People do not realize how good they are, how well coached they are, how talented that team is. They're going to give Georgia more fits than, say, probably Vandy will, or maybe South Carolina. This is going to be a good team, and people are going to try to read way too much into it.
Roddy, great stuff. Always appreciate the time. Good updates on the Georgia Bulldogs. They head into this matchup with UAB this weekend. We'll do it again soon.
All right, thanks. Take care.
Roddy Nabulsi of UGA Sports. Follow him on Twitter at Roddy Nabulsi. He joined us on the Michelob Ultra Hotline. Superior Light Beer. Low calories, low carbs, zero fat. Live life to the ultra. If it's not JT Daniels, how much should UAB change their game plan for this game?
I would, if I were a UAB, I feel good enough about being able to match up with my defense against Georgia's offense. Like, I don't necessarily care if it's JT Daniels, Carson Beck, Stetson Bennett, doesn't matter. It's not like one guy is a tremendously different prospect or player than any of the other two. Of course, yeah, if Stetson Bennett's in there, it's a little easier to get hands on the football. So maybe you adjust a little there. I don't know enough about Carson Beck. I really don't. I can't even sit here and try to pretend like I do. So if he plays extensive amount minutes this weekend, it'll be the first time I've really seen him in action like that. So anybody's guess there. But if I'm UAB, I still am going to do the same thing, man. Like, I'm going to do whatever I can to try to neutralize the line of scrimmage. I might put a little stress on that right guard spot. I might try to maybe amplify the pressure a little bit. If JT is holding it and I get a hit on him, knowing he's not at 100%, I might lay on the pile a little longer, if I'm going to be totally honest. And I'm going to get up and I'm going to press. I'm going to challenge those wide receivers, man. Because you can tell me all day long, well, they're taking strides at wide receiver. I got to see it. I didn't think their wide receivers played very well last week. And I'm not so sure if I'm UAB, I don't kind of like my matchup there. So I expect UAB to give them all they want. Now, is UAB going to win the game? No. I would have a very hard time thinking that UAB is going to be able to put together enough offense. Barring a big play or two that they hit off play action, they catch Georgia sleeping. But I have a difficult time thinking that UAB wins this game. But I would not be surprised if we look, you know, middle of the fourth quarter and the game is 21-0 Georgia, 21-7 Georgia. And next thing you know, UAB scores a touchdown, kicks a field goal, 21-10. That's kind of how I see it. 21-10, 28-10, 31-10 in that vicinity. But I don't think it's going to be one of those games where it's just a complete runaway from start to finish.
So if you're David Reeves and that's your guy and you know JT Daniels is not in, you replaced your right guard, you still have technically second team center in. I don't think Erickson's going to be back. You dialing up more?
Because I think I don't know if Georgia can just pound me. UAB is stout. So no, I'm not going to give them. Aggressiveness is great, but it also opens the door to potentially be hit. And I would not want, if I were David Reeves, the defensive coordinator for UAB, I would not want to do anything that is too aggressive that could potentially give them a big play because we screw it up or something like that. I would play base as much as I had to and see how I held up. And then if the situation in the game needed me to dictate something defensively, then I'd ramp it up. But it'd be purely situational. And I would just play standard defense because I think I can hold up in that regard against that offensive line that's a little bit of a patchwork right now and a quarterback that might be a backup.
So one thing, I'll tell you, one guy that I came away with extremely impressed with was Alex Wright on that UAB defensive line. We kind of barely saw him show up late in some of the film we watched from last year, 6'7", 270-pound outside linebacker defensive end. When we watched him last year, we both were just like, hold on, who is this dude on the end of the line of scrimmage? And then watching him in their opener, he did some good things. So he adds some size. Going to need that. That's what you're going to have to counter, because I think it's going to be a run-heavy plan either way. Because if there is some sort of an oblique or abdominal injury to JT Daniels, I don't think you want him spending a ton of time in the pocket.
No.
So
get the ball out of his hands.
Take us through a quarterback. If that, I mean, that obviously driving the football, rotation, I would imagine turning, handing the football off. There are a lot of ways that that could become problematic, and I would think you could aggravate that again and maybe make it worse.
Yeah, I don't know if it would be made worse. I mean, it's soft tissue oblique, right? I don't think it's something like you have a strained, it's not like it's a tendon that's got some problems in there. That's where it's a little concerning. You have inflammation or something like that. It's an oblique. Shoot it and let's go. I know it sounds crazy, but like that's my thought process. Like if you can numb it, find a way. Give me some muscle relaxers. Let's have a day. All right. So that would be my approach. Healthy or not, that would have been what I would have done. And it is probably one of those circumstances where I don't think it's going to have a huge impact on him, because I don't think a soft tissue, and I'm trying to remember, I didn't have really a lot of soft tissue stuff. Did you have a lot of soft tissue stuff?
I had hamstring issues.
Did you?
I'm not super flexible. So my hamstrings were always tight and I had issues with those, and that was,
but
that
a tweak,
was a
like it didn't affect, it might, I mean, to me, if I got an oblique, I still think I can probably throw it. Now, especially in a game, practice would have been a little more challenging because I don't have the adrenaline rush
sure
that I have in a game. In a game, who cares? But I don't think I'm going to get hit and be like, oh, my oblique. No, it's probably not something I'm all that concerned about. So well,
it depends too what it is. We don't know exactly if that is what the injury is, because you hear core injury, and sometimes that can include this, you know, the dreaded sports hernia that we hear about. And I mean, I don't even, next time we have victory over injury, I would love to ask, you know, Waldrop or Kane or Dugas exactly, you know, how they describe that, what that is, because you hear so many different people talk about it in different ways and how it's treated and what's done. These guys are flying to Europe to have their sports hernias treated. It's just, it's a very odd injury.
Hernia stinks. It's just a 3-week injury. You're out.
You're right. And one that does not go away, that needs some extra time. So some depends on the severity, but I mean, knowing what's going on with that offensive line and that they may not have the extra help at tight end, I might look at going after them. And then You just add in run support too. So, which I think that's going to be the big test. If UAB holds up physically along the defensive line, all of a sudden it might be an interesting game.
Right.
And I want to see emotionally where Georgia is. I have no question if UAB emotionally is going to show up for this game. They have every reason to. Georgia coming off a game that they spent the entire offseason preparing for. Yeah, that I would think that if there's a negative of opening the season in that kind of a game, and again, Kirby told us at Media Days, yes, I have seen and felt extra focus because of who we open with. The negative, I would think, has to be, what do you do after that?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have the same, number one, you don't have the same amount of time to hype yourself up, to get ready, to prepare, to look at things. It's a quick turnaround after you spent 8 months on one team, and now all of a sudden, oh, it's Wednesday, I got to get ready. So that changes things.
Yep. I would say that I would really, if I were Kirby, I would really not like having a team following Clemson that's as good as UAB.
No.
That would not be something I'd be excited about. Now, you want to bring Georgia State to school? Come on. You want to bring Georgia Southern? Come on, please. Bring them all.
Colgate?
You want to bring Georgia Tech?
Oh,
whoa. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. Is that too soon? My bad. No, I love Georgia Tech. Yes. You know I'm a Jeff Collins guy.
You have been hard on the ACC.
Well,
I've had people
anti-ACC
text me
guy.
And tell me that your hatred for the ACC is showing.
Oh, it should.
True colors.
The only thing I hate more than the ACC right now are Army worms, because they're taking over here in Central Alabama. The good news is I have Wayne's Pest Control to thank, because army worms are no longer a problem for me in my front yard. I called Wayne's out because I saw the warning signs. I saw brown spots that resembled drought conditions. I saw moths flying around my yard. I saw evidence of spots on the end of the blades of grass. Then I looked in my grass. I saw worms. I actually saw worms. So what did I have to do? I called the pros at Wayne's Pest Control. They've proudly been serving Birmingham and communities across Alabama for nearly 50 years. You don't just take care of your army worms. They'll take care of your termites, take care of your pest control, mosquito prevention, and other lawn care services. So if you're a homeowner or a business owner, give Wayne's a call, 866-WAYNES-1. And if you've been impacted or want to prevent an infestation of armyworms, give the pros at Wayne's a call. Once again, that's at 866-WAYNES-1.
Injuries not just affecting Georgia UAB. There are other massive games around college football this weekend that could be heavily affected by injuries. We'll get into a couple of those next on McElroy and Kubik in the morning. 8:31 a.m. Thursday, September 9th. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I don't know if you saw this one, Greg, but along the lines of NIL, college athletes who have the most fan connections on Cameo. You know what Cameo is, right?
Yes.
Okay. You a big fan? Do you send cameos to your friends for
their
birthdays?
No. I've had someone hit me up about starting one myself. I'm like, dude, if you think I'm going to do that, I'll just send people videos.
Hard pass. Videos.
Right.
Just DM me and tell me your kid wants
just tell
a
me your kid.
Birthday.
Exactly. Right. Like, come on. I'm going to make $5 off this
I'm
video.
I'm going to get three requests total.
Right. I think it's more about the defense mechanism that I'm putting up because I don't want to put myself out there like that and not have anybody ever use the service. Like, I'm just
facts.
I'm just putting up a defense mechanism.
Makes sense.
The number one college athlete on Cameo is from the SEC. Do you want to take a guess who it is?
Bryce Young.
No. Not in the top 10.
Give me the team.
Alabama.
God.
It's not Bryce.
It's the best defensive player in the nation.
Will Anderson.
Wow.
No.
Henry To'oto'o.
The best defender in the SEC.
It's not Will Anderson.
The best defensive player in the SEC.
Malachi Moore.
At Alabama.
It's not Will Anderson.
Montana Fouts. Get it together. Raise your game. Raise your
game.
Got
me on that one.
It makes sense.
Davion Mintz is two, which, by the way, just small teaser for SEC Nation Saturday morning. You want to check that out. Davion Mintz is two. Other SEC players coming in the top 10, which, by the way, first off, a couple of these are funny. Buddy Boeheim, three. Brock Purdy, four.
What? Okay.
Geo Baker, five.
Who?
So we don't want to close the whole system, right? Like, we're not, this is, now it's fair? Things are fair now? Okay, just making sure. Spencer Rattler, six. Sean Clifford, seven. Bijan Robinson, eight. Zamir White at Georgia, nine. And Kyle Hamilton, the guy you just saw, 10 there. Cameo college athletes, making some extra money via NIL. And just for our guy, Steve, you can save money at Backyard Adventures, if you're looking at a playground for your kids. Cahaba Valley Road, they've got them all set up already. They're all there. So your kids can go climb, swing, slide, and check out all the options of whatever they want. You check out the size that you need because they'll come measure your yard. They'll even print you out a 3D version of what it's going to look like in your yard. You can customize your playground. And the best part, Jeff and the guys come put it together. You're not going to pick up a single tool to assemble the playground in your backyard because Backyard Adventure is going to handle all of that. They're warrantied. If you move, they come move it for you. And if anything does break or anything, you have any sort of an issue with it, they're going to come out to your house and fix it right away. Backyard Adventures on Cahaba Valley Road. Check them out online at backyardalabama.com. My wife was searching for a playground for our kids for over a month. Finally came across Backyard Adventures. Thankfully, they came and assembled one in our backyard. If it's not raining, our kids are going to be on that thing at some point in time during the day. They absolutely love it, and it's going to last a lifetime. We know it's always going to be there. So if you're in the market, go to backyardalabama.com or call 408 the number 4FUN. That's 408-4386 for Backyard Adventures. Maybe the biggest game of the weekend, Ohio State, Oregon. Greg, it looks like this thing may lose a little bit of shine, a little bit of luster, just because of the fact that Kayvon Thibodeau's status still uncertain. Mario Cristobal saying yesterday he's day-to-day. He's not there yet, but he's trying to get there. For a guy that's tweaked up as he is, that has the explosion that he does, not saying that he wouldn't be able to go with an ankle sprain, but he just feels like one of those guys that would be something that really slowed him down, really hampered him a lot. Like quarterback, especially a guy that's kind of sitting back in the pocket a lot, he's somebody that could still manage that. You know, maybe a tight end that's not relying as much on his explosiveness, a guard, somebody like that, all right, you might be okay. But if you're relying on your get off and your quickness and you're going to have to change direction multiple times a game with pass rush moves, that's going to be a big impact on your game and what you're able to do. Now, just having him out there, I think, would be very beneficial for Oregon. But let's say he's 70, 75% and he's not able to go the entire game. How much does it change your opinion on what Oregon might be able to do in the horseshoe Saturday morning?
I don't think they're going to have much of a chance anyways. As much as I appreciate what Mario Cristobal has built, when I watched that Oregon team last week, there was a few things I was remarkably disappointed in. One, they were playing Fresno. All right, you know, we're Fresno guys. Me and Cole, diehard Fresno
fans. It's our
fans.
Adopted team.
Yes.
Damien, are you in that club as
Absolutely.
Well? Okay.
Absolutely.
Damien loves Fresno too.
I had a little bird tell me 3 weeks ago, hey, dude, y'all need to check out Fresno. They got some good week zero, week one opponents. Just check them out. You're going to like what you see.
Thank you for
sure enough, we
that.
Put them on.
Brag. Okay, you did it. You told us to watch it. And yes,
well,
we
no, what I'm getting
that.
At is I usually don't just, hey, let's stumble onto some Fresno tape. I mean, someone usually has to get you there.
Yeah, got
so
to.
We
yeah,
got haven't
you.
Said that about Wyoming yet.
All right, well, I actually watched, the funny is I watched Wyoming yesterday, and their quarterback number two threw one of the worst picks of the weekend last weekend. So,
okay, not off to a good start.
Everybody under the bus.
Not to a good start.
Well, it's a first drive of the year, and he throws a bad pick. I mean, it's not the way you want to start the season, all right? So, yes, I did watch Wyoming yesterday, ironically enough. I like Wyoming, always have. Let's get back to business. Okay? When you look at Kayvon Thibodeau, he, of course, has a massive impact on the game. When you are in obvious passing situation, you have to occasionally keep an extra guy in, make sure he's accounted for, because he will beat even the best tackles in college football around the edge. But what I would say when you watch Oregon as a whole, man, there were not that many bright spots last week. I was really disappointed in their personnel at wide receiver. I was really disappointed in how their offensive line got pushed around. I didn't think they ran insanely hard. They did not play super physical. Like Mario, when he first got there and he inherited that great offensive line with Penei Sewell and a few other guys that went on to play in the NFL, you started to think, man, that Pac-12 identity is going to change drastically because Oregon's going to make them change. They were going to be physical. They were going to be stout. They were going to get after you. And I didn't see any of that last week. Not against Fresno. Fresno was by far the more physical football team. By far. Now, Oregon's got elite talent, I think, when compared to Fresno, as far as being able to run and be explosive. But there were several different positions last week in which that talent advantage was neutralized because of how physical Fresno was. Well, guess what? The talent advantage is now going to be on the side of Ohio State. And Ohio State, by the way, last week, their performance left quite a bit to be desired. You don't think they've heard for the last 9 days how non-physical they were? Because they got pushed around a little bit themselves. But they have some talent. They have some dudes, a lot more than Fresno has. So if Ohio State brings their lunch pail like they should, and Fresno is able to push around Oregon, what do you think Ohio State's going to do? It's a 14-point spread. I'd lay them all day and tomorrow.
I think Ohio State physically does have the advantage in this game, and you're right, Sewell, Throckmorton, those guys, it looked as though they were going to kind of be the Stanford that does it in a different way, the Stanford that was more athletic when you speak to that physicality on the offensive line, on the defensive line, and just it hasn't really been able to continue. I will say I was impressed with Anthony Brown and some of the things that he was able to do for Oregon.
He made some nice throws. He's a good player.
And there were a couple that he just missed down the field. But, I mean, his legs are ultimately what made the difference in that game. So that's got to be a big part of what you're going to be able to do. But speaking to the athleticism, you're not just going to be able to run around Ohio State's defense.
No.
Even though I don't think the front seven is what it's been the last few years, you're not running by the linebackers. You're not just going to pull away from the defensive ends. And the safeties are not going to be guys that you can just head to the sideline and all of a sudden get the corner and be able to turn upfield and gain 15, 20 yards. So that part's going to be different. I'll be interested to see sort of where Joe Moorhead believes he can attack this defense. Because if it's down the field, obviously you're going to have to rely on protection. I don't know if that Oregon offensive line is ready to handle that just yet. If he thinks he can try to run at them, I definitely don't think that that's going to be where he thinks that can happen. I think looking at trying to put the second-level defenders in conflict, be it with quick throws, be it with RPOs, you add something with the quarterback run game to try to keep those guys in balance. And then I think you'll see a lot of movement, motion, pre-snap from Oregon. I think they want to try to get this defense a little bit confused. They have that in their arsenal. They're able to do it. Joe's done it for a while. And I think that has to be a way. I mean, they got to steal yards against Ohio State's defense. They have to. I'm almost more concerned, though, about how the Oregon defense matches up against Ohio State's offense.
Whew.
Because I felt a lot better about the Ohio State offensive line after watching them week one. You know your quarterback's just going to get more and more comfortable. I mean, it's Stroud's first start. He goes for 294 and four touchdowns.
And rallied after what was a difficult second quarter.
So he's going to feel better about things. And I think the further we get down this schedule, Ohio State's going to realize that the younger backs are the way to go. I understand that Master Teague is nice. He can do some things. But Mayan Williams is going to be that guy. I mean, he's the one with the juice. He is the one that's explosive. And maybe Travion Henderson ends up being a little bit bigger part. But the younger backs were the ones that came in and really gave a spark to that Ohio State offense. I think they're implemented a little bit more this week.
Right.
If Thibodeau's not 100% and you're not having to worry about a tight end over to his side and you're not having to take a guy like Jeremy Ruckert and burn him by always putting him wherever five is, then that's advantage Ohio State. So I'm beginning to lean more towards you. And even some of the outside factors you begin to look at, you got an 11 o'clock kick coming from Oregon, mm-hmm. playing in the horseshoe. First home game for Ohio State. Fans going to be back.
It'll
that place can be rocking, man.
Yeah, it's nice.
I'm beginning to lean more towards where Greg is going on this game.
Yep.
I thought Ohio State was going to win it. Now I'm wondering, are they just going to walk away with it and it's not going to be competitive in the second half?
Well, here's the other thing, too. Just remember the last time these two teams played. And I don't think this Ohio State team is as good as the 2014 version, but I saw it with my own two eyes. I saw it up close and personal at media days before the national championship game in 2014. I saw Ohio State get off the bus and said, oh my God, that's the best looking football team I've seen in a really long time. I saw Oregon get off the bus. I said, oh my God, that looks like a bunch of high school players. They were undersized, they were skinny, they were lean. They were not at any point comparable to Ohio State as far as physicality is concerned. I really worry about the matchup. Because when in doubt, I'm going to take the team that's more physical. 99 times out of 100, I'm taking the team that's more physical. And guess who's more physical? Ohio State. And I'm not sure it's that close based on what we saw last weekend. Unless someone gives Oregon a major shot in the arm, it's going to be, I think, a very one-sided affair.
All right, physicality is a big part of the storyline with maybe the next best game happening this weekend in college football. Who has the advantage? We'll tell you our opinion on that one next, right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. All right, welcome back in, McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. You mentioned those ratings from week one, Georgia-Clemson, 8.9 million at its peak, second most watched Saturday kickoff game in the last 20 years.
I wonder what was one. Did you see what was one?
I wasn't sure. I'm not 100% positive. I'm trying to go back and think of.
Like week one kickoff. Was
Bama Florida State, maybe?
See, I don't think so. I don't think Florida State would move the needle like that.
But that year, they were top five team going into the season.
They were.
They were.
Game of the century.
No, that's Alabama LSU.
Oh, my fault.
I honestly don't know. I really don't know. I'm not sure.
Game of the Go greatest
open all I know all is that's time. A big, that's a really big number.
Well, I'd be thankfully you were on your A game, Notre Dame, Florida State, 7.8, second most Sunday, second most watchers for a Sunday kickoff game.
Yes.
Which is
G-Mac?
First
incredible.
Was we peaked at 8.88 million, which is a massive number. And it peaked, of course, in the fourth quarter when the game was on the line. But also, the biggest one that they had, biggest regular season game that ESPN's had in quite some time, was Texas and Notre Dame on a Sunday a few years back. So
that was big. Texas was back after that one.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, they were.
Texas was very back. So that, I think, set the stage for the Sunday game, which I think doesn't need to go anywhere. That's a really good window that we need to take advantage of in the sport.
Same thing with the Monday game. I don't want to see that thing going away.
No, I love it.
That was great.
If you missed Riding to Boolsey on the show earlier, you can find the podcast at jocksfm.com. That's where all of our podcasts are, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get yours. Please like, rate, and review those. One thing that Roddy stuck out, he said that JT could re-injure that oblique by... Is that what he said?
By shaking a salt shaker?
I thought that's what he said. I mean, he said that he could re-injure that thing like with a salt shaker. Just what that made me think of. Sorry.
Who sang that? Was that Little John and the East Side Boys?
Oh, that was the Ying Yang Twins.
Ying Yang Twins.
Little John's in it, but yeah.
I couldn't remember.
He's in there.
You close, yeah. You,
he's in it?
You, yeah.
Back I mean, he's then, in it. Back yeah. Then, when they start all coming, it was all the same.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
They all did the same stuff.
Right. Cool.
He's in the ballpark. Good job.
There you go.
Speaking of which, if you you know, if you want to shake it like a salt shaker, how would you like to do it in a private Pepsi Zoom happy hour with your favorite Jocks host? You can go to jocksfm.com now to enter your chance to win. We're going to draw one lucky winner on September 13th, thanks to our friends at Pepsi, because we know everything's better with Pepsi. Register today for your chance to win a special Zoom call and delicious Pepsi product. Jocks, better with Pepsi. That's what I like.
Have y'all thought about what y'all going to do when on the Zoom call?
Oh, no, it's Landrum. It's definitely going to be Landrum.
Oh. So, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, never mind then.
I've talked to multiple people that have said they can't wait to have a private Zoom call with Landrum.
What? Correct.
Yes.
You realize he was a
that is the,
right
that is the consensus of the Birmingham area.
I got you. So yes. If there were like NIL deals around here, he would be
new. Yes, he'd be at the top of the list.
I want to talk. I want to talk week two with McLaren.
Everybody is dying to have a private Zoom call with Landrum, from what I hear.
It's great. So, it's great.
Think about how great that would be. He can do awesome. It from home. He can have his live rabbit, and they can do the whole thing.
Not right the there. Fake rabbit.
Yes,
no, not a rabbit's foot.
He has a real rabbit.
A real one.
Yes, it's that would true. Be your. That would be the way for you to go. Okay. That would be my suggestion. Landrum would be the way to go. You want to have a private Zoom call with Landrum? Trust me. Trust me. I'm telling you that. Trust me that Iowa State is going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm excited first and foremost, Greg, that this game's getting the stage that it's getting. College Game Day going to be there. A 3:30 kick on ABC, two top 10 teams. Normally, you wouldn't feel like you had to sell that to a lot of people, but there are still some folks that are going to look at this game and say, "Meh, I'm not really sure how good that's going to be. Why would I tune in?" Now, if Charlie Kolar is not 100%, that's obviously going to impact Iowa State some.
Right.
They didn't look great in the opener. Understand that. Get that. However, these are two good football teams, and there are a lot of reasons to like both of these teams, but you brought up physicality in our last segment.
Right.
It's one that I think could go either direction, but just going off week one's film, I would lean Iowa in the physicality department in this game, and especially when Iowa State's on defense, I feel like that could be problematic because this Iowa offensive line can get after you. Tyler Lindenbaum's the best center in college football. They have a group that understand. The main thing is, you got guys that can bully you on a lot of offensive lines. Iowa understands their scheme. I mean, the fluidity in which they manage their run scheme is a beautiful thing to watch. And that's why they have success with it, and that's why it goes. It's one of the reasons this team's won the Joe Moore Award is they are coached to run it the same way every year.
Yep.
And it's good, and it works, and they operate it well. So I'm very interested to see this game because – I'm not exactly sure what the path to victory is for Iowa State.
Yeah, they got to run the ball effectively. They have to. I mean, that's a big thing because Brock Purdy, for as good as he is, and I think there will be opportunities in the pass game, but they have to keep it in manageable down and distance because Iowa's pretty good up front defensively. Should come as no surprise. That's who they are. The other thing, too, this has been a bad matchup for Iowa State, man. Iowa's won five straight. Five straight. Dating back to 2015, 2019. Five straight. Iowa Hawkeyes over the Clones. Now, this is a different Clones team. It's a veteran group. If Kolar's at 100%, that, of course, factors in. The big thing that they are not going to be able, I think, to cover. If you look at Iowa State, man, I don't know what they're going to do. Now, it's funny because they have good defensive backs. They have good players. They see a tight end every day. But Sam Laporta, number 84 for Iowa, that's a name to remember. Remember that guy. Also, do me a favor and remember Goodson, number 15 for Iowa. These are two guys that are a little different from your typical Iowa guys. These are not big, you know, lurky, long guys. We're talking about twitchy, Goodson in particular, with some jets. He's the running back. Goodson is. The tight end's number 84, Sam Laporta. He's their go-to guy in the passing game. Those two guys, they're different. I think Iowa wins this game. I think it'll be tough. I think it'll be physical. I think it'll be a very, very close game all the way down the stretch. But I like the Hawkeyes, and they're an underdog on the road in Jack Trice Stadium.
It doesn't feel right. It doesn't.
I'm with
the
you.
The line doesn't feel right on this game.
I'm with you.
I don't know.
I think the wrong team's favored.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one to watch. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. The coach, Wimp Sanderson's 2-for-2 on his blue plate specials. What does he have for this weekend? He joins us on the other side and lets us know. Also want to ask him just about preparing for lower tier opponents. We heard from Nick Saban earlier. How did Coach Wim Sanderson handle that when he was at Alabama? We ask him next on McElroy and Kubik in the morning.